Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion, 14 minutes past 9 o'clock on this Tuesday, the last day of June, the 30th of June, and we are very happy that you are with us. We have a lot to talk about, a very busy news day, and we have a great panel to discuss all these important issues with, and of course, we welcome you. Panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let me introduce everybody, and we will get started right away. Alan Chartok is here, WAMC's very own, our founder-in-chief. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm a little angry at Ray Graff. He just read the weather forecast. And as far as I'm concerned, the person who reads it made it.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, kill the messenger is the that's the way it works. Sure. Well, we'll get through it. We do need the rain, so that's
there's good. There's no question about it. It's good stuff.
All right, let's also move on to welcome Tuesday regular, our good friend and a person who has been with us since the beginning of this program, and we are eternally lucky. Mike Spain is the former Times Union Associate Editor. Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm great and happy to be here.
Always a pleasure to have you with us. We also have the good fortune to have counterterrorism expert and best-selling author Malcolm Nance on the program. Good morning, Malcolm.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Wonderful to have you here, as always. And we also, of course, welcome Linda Ellerbe, Peabody and an Emmy Award-winning journalist who has been on our program, and we're thrilled to have her. Good morning, Linda. How are you?
I am just fine. Alan,
yes?
As you well know, it's like Robert's Rules of Orders. A motion to shoot the messenger is like a motion to adjourn. It's never out of order.
So you agree with me that it's all Ray Graff's fault? It's all Ray Graff's fault, right?
Absolutely. If it comes to something I've reported, of course I disagree with you.
Well, good morning, all. It's a pleasure to have you, and we'll talk about a lot of things this morning. We welcome your input, listeners, and all you have to do is write to us, panel at WAMC.org. Just keep your letters short and to the point. Pre-read them before you send them, and that makes it easier for us to get to as many as possible. All right. Let's talk about this Russia thing. American officials provided a written briefing in late February to President Trump, laying out their conclusion that a Russian military intelligence unit ordered and paid bounties to Taliban-linked militants to kill U.S. and coalition troops in Afghanistan. Two officials familiar with the matter are saying that the investigation into the suspected Russian covert operation to incentivize such killings is focused in part on an April 2019 car bombing that killed three Marines as one such potential attack, according to multiple officials familiar with the matter. The new information emerged as the White House tried on Monday to play down the intelligence assessment that Russia sought to encourage and reward killings, including reiterating a claim that Mr. Trump was never briefed about the matter and portraying the conclusion as disputed and dubious. But that stance clashed with the disclosure by two officials that the intelligence was included months ago in Mr. Trump's president's daily brief document, a compilation of the government's latest secrets and best insights about foreign policy and national security that is prepared for him to read. Alan, we talked about this story yesterday. Obviously, there's many developments on it since then, but I think you and I were saying, I asked the question of how is this story going to have legs, and it certainly seems to be gaining a very, very big legs.
I can't wait to hear Malcolm on this. However, I do think that the potential here is a charge of treason against the president. I know that sounds wild, but I don't think it is. His job, of course, is to read his intelligence briefings. He doesn't. He's lazy. He's not that smart, technically smart. He's smart enough to get to be president of the United States. But here he is, and he has been playing footsie with the Russians from the very beginning. You will all remember when he went up to those diplomats and he said to them, "I just fired Comey. That should put an end to," as the words you just used, Joe, "the Russian thing, that Russian thing." And from the very beginning, we've been talking about what a wonderful man Putin is. Trust me, he isn't. And putting himself at Putin's mercy, because I think Putin may well have some information here that we have not been told about up to now. That's the way they play it, not only in the new Russia, but in the old Soviet Union, which is what Putin has been trying to reestablish. This is a national disgrace. And if this doesn't do him in, I don't know what will.
Malcolm Nance.
Well, you know, as an intelligence professional, I have a unique take on this. And then as an author, I have already written three books asserting everything that we've all said about Donald Trump. And we've even had a panelist on the roundtable who used to work for the Times Union that called all of this Russian stuff a conspiracy theory. It is not a conspiracy theory. And now we are seeing some on the ground, boots in the mud information that is showing that Donald Trump's obsequiousness, and that's the only word that I can really come up with, a slavish devotion to protecting Vladimir Putin at all costs, may in fact have cost American citizens their lives. And even to this day, I was on air this weekend. I was on air last night trying to explain that I've collected intelligence at this level, and I know how the process goes. It has to be evaluated. But it is so critical that the president of the United States be aware of this for its geopolitical implications, even if it's a well-developed rumor, that it absolutely would have shot its way through the intelligence community and would have been presented to the president. Donald Trump and his staff are playing this game with the word brief, to be cute. They're trying to make it seem that if someone didn't come in and say, Mr. President, Russia is actually paying bounties for our troops in Afghanistan, and that wasn't the subject of the meeting, they're saying it didn't happen and Donald Trump was left out. That's not the way it works. The PDB is presented to the president every day. It is well known. Donald Trump does not read them. He doesn't want to read them. There's rumors that he's a functional illiterate, and that in contrast, Barack Obama would read 6 inches of pure intelligence reporting every day so that he knew every aspect of that information and how it impacted the United States, and used his National Security Council staff to get deeper briefings so that he would know how to respond. Donald Trump does not believe in any of that. But what he does believe in, he believes in protecting Vladimir Putin at all costs. Alan, you and I have discussed the word treason on this on air before. It's the only crime listed in the Constitution. It has very, very precise meaning. But, so this doesn't rise to treason as it is in the laws. But rhetorically, it absolutely is treason. I mean, go ahead and use the word, but it's a betrayal of the oath of office. And it's the one thing that I think that some Republicans can understand. But for cult followers in the Trump, world, they wouldn't care if he personally shot U.S. service members. They don't believe anything the news media says. And that's precisely the first words out of Donald Trump's mouth. Don't believe the fake news.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Joe. I just wanted to ask you very quickly, Malcolm. In fact, he and Putin are playing on the same team he knew about it, wouldn't that be treason?
You got to understand that him and Putin playing on the same team are that's almost a fact. OK, but it's the question of the mindset of the person who's playing on the team. Putin sees Team Putin. Donald Trump sees Team Money, right? He is playing on the Donald Trump team for himself. And this is where we say that he's more than a useful idiot. A useful idiot does things and doesn't know that it's benefiting someone. Trump is a witting asset. He is a person that is aware that things are being done for him. But we are not at declared war with Russia. We are at war with the Taliban, on the other hand, and Donald Trump's actions openly benefit the Taliban. The question is, did he say something about not wanting to break off or harm the negotiations with turning Afghanistan over to the Taliban, which is precisely what he was in the process of doing. We've got to remember, this is the guy that was secretly invited the Taliban to Camp David. That would be more questionable. But legally, it's not treason. It's just a betrayal of his office. It would be another impeachable charge. But as we know now, nothing sticks to this guy because 40% of this nation no longer believes in the values of this nation.
Wendell Ellerbe.
Wow. Thank you, Malcolm. That was strong, and I think well put. I agree with, I mean, there is a great deal of kind of cutesy lying going on here in what did the president know and when did he know it. It has become clear that they, those in the administration surrounding him, the toadies, some of whom are his relatives, that he doesn't like to read. We know Trump doesn't like to read or possibly doesn't do it very well. They brief him orally, but they, when it's something that they don't want to get, that he's not going to like, then often, as and I think you will confirm this, Malcolm, there have been times when they don't brief him about it, but they'll put it in writing and put it on his desk, knowing the chances are good he's never going to read it. You're saying it actually goes farther than that, and I am prepared to believe it because there's no amount of scrambling and spinning right here by the professional liars that surround him can obscure the facts that with Trump, when confronted, and I believe he was confronted with reliable intelligence that Russia was paying for the murder of American troops, did nothing. And as I'm now going to read from a friend of mine, Lisa E. Davis, who writes a blog called Journal of the Plague Years. She is an extraordinary intelligent woman. And she said, as the pandemic body count rises and more damning proof emerges that Trump has more loyalty than Russia than the country he swore an oath to protect, it becomes clear why he wants to protect Confederate statues. They were traitors, too. That was a pretty strong statement.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I mean, you guys have covered it pretty well. Could it be that his security people, as Linda referenced, are just weary of what has been described as Trump being contentious when he's getting these intelligence briefings? He argues with his advisors. He trusts more what Fox News says than what his own advisor said, and they're just fed up with it, so they kind of slip it across the desk to him and say, yeah, here's your intelligence report, knowing fully well he wouldn't read it. But that would be malfeasance on their part. I mean, these are not the same people as his kids, you know, around him and Jared Kushner or anybody like that. These are at least it's professionals who've done this in previous administrations. I mean, they would have been compelled, I think, by duty to take something this important and tell him orally so that he actually did know it. I can't imagine they would shirk their responsibility and try to slip it in.
Mm-hmm. Malcolm?
Yeah, I to a certain extent, I agree with that. But this whole issue of him being afraid of his staff, being afraid to tell the king that he has no clothes on, when we're talking about the lives of American citizens, that would be equally treasonous. That would be equally, criminal to say, well, you know, the boss is going to hit the ceiling and, you know, we just can't tell him that we may have already lost 3 Marines in an IED attack and that we've found, you know, tens of millions of fresh dollars from the Tajikistan Central Bank that the CIA has traced back to, you know, Moscow subcontractors, you know, a mercenary company. That, by the way, is a hypothesis, which will probably turn out to be true. But they did find an extraordinary large amount of money that the Taliban would never have been able to have, out in the field paying these militants. And they've gotten interrogation reports that they were being paid and they were going to get a bounty for the head of every service member. Anyone involved in this, and we find out they didn't inform Trump or they informed him and are now lying, needs to be held criminally responsible for for the deaths of these service members, and we need to shove it down their throat. I personally am all for just doing another impeachment, just to get it on the record, rather than saying, well, we'll just let the electorate do this, because he could win, and this could become a norm for all of us. So, you know, as a professional in this field, I'm disgusted. And every person I know who has served in the intelligence community, we know that this guy is beholden to Russia for something.
Now, Malcolm,
it's an open secret.
We got about a minute, and I just want to get this in real quick. Well, actually, I'll hold it for the break. My question to you, and you can answer after the break, but the fact is now everyone's demanding that, wondering why there hasn't been something from the White House to Russia now, which there hasn't been, and I'd like to talk about that when we return. We have a great group this morning. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Linda Ellerbe, and Mike Spain. We will always welcome your letters as well. I'm sure you have a lot to say. We'd love to hear what it is. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Again, we just ask you that you keep your letters short and to the point and on topic. Don't include links or attachments, and don't use abbreviations, and proofread your emails. And I know that seems like a lot of rules, but it just makes our job a lot easier. Panel at WAMC.org, and we will continue after this news break from the BBC. Good morning. Welcome back. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Malcolm Nance, and Linda Ellerbe. Malcolm, I was just wanted to check with you right before the break. We were talking about this, about what we do now, and what should be told to the Russians that has not been, and is it too late?
Well, it's way too late. And the Russians have been emboldened over the last 4 years to believe that they could get away with anything with Donald Trump in office. I once again reiterate who we're up against. We are up against an ex-KGB officer. He was in mid-career when the Soviet Union fell. And though he is no longer a lifelong communist that he was, he believes in some of the strategic objectives of the Soviet Union. And the principal one that he still believes in and has oriented the Russian Federation to use is the destruction of liberal democracy around the world. But he's aware that, you know, as a billionaire, Putin understands that communism was a failed system. He now believes in oligarchy and fascism. And he has pretty much supported everything Donald Trump has done. He will actually take whatever scolding that he'll take that Trump will do as a formality, or that the Republicans will do. But he practically bought the Republican Party through the NRA, through the evangelicals. We've already seen Russian agents were in the United States in the run-up to the 2016 election and got influence. What do? We make sure that this election in 2020 is a referendum on the survival of the United States, because that's what it is. We have to decide whether we are a constitutional democracy, also known as a republic, which is a government that protects the rights of its voting minorities, minority parties, or that we prefer to go to full-scale autocracy with one man who is clearly out of his mind running this nation and dismantling the remainder of the norms for the rest of our lives.
So, Linda, what do you think happens next?
Actually, I'm hanging on Malcolm's every word here. He knows considerably more about this than I do. What I think happens, what I think ought to happen next is what Malcolm suggested. What I think probably happens next is it goes on and the news cycle continues and it's some new low again tomorrow.
Alan, any chance that, as Malcolm suggested, that there would be another impeachment, or that there's that much anger?
I think that the Democrats in the House will have to decide whether there's any chance that it could work. And they know from their polling that this whole thing raises a lot of ire. I think what's happening with Joe Biden and the way that he's handling things is the right way to go. Right now, I mean, I get what Malcolm is saying, and I know why this is so serious, and I already stated that. But right now, it is up to the. It is really up to the Republicans to keep digging their own graves. Look at, I think of what the United States senators who happen to be Republicans are thinking right now, when it, there's more and more evidence about this relationship with Putin, and how Trump literally belongs to Putin. You know, I don't know that an impeachment proceeding would help get Trump out of there faster.
Mike?
Yeah, I see that now the White House is giving briefings to Republicans, friendly Republicans, including the U.S. Representative from the North Country of New York, Elise Stefanik. They're going to the White House and they're getting briefed on this. The theme seems to be that it was contradictory intelligence reports and they weren't 100% confirmed. And there's some suggestion from the, you know, Kayleigh McEnany, the spokesperson for Trump, that perhaps they just, you know, these are just some possible things. They weren't really facts presented to the president. But Malcolm, you could answer this. When the president gets a briefing, does it represent a complete unanimous conclusion of the intelligence people, or are there different versions of a story that's out there that get presented to a president?
There are in fact multiple ways that information gets to a president, and I've mentioned this again on air that one of the ways when we find a piece of critical intelligence, something which has validity, the initial report that this came off of was the finding of a very large sum of money, which was so fresh and so new, could only have come from a government, and that the people who were captured with it essentially said that it came from Russian agents of some sort. That would have been what we call flash traffic. There is a communications protocol which is put in place for critical geopolitical intelligence, which gets a single line message to the president of the United States in 10 minutes or less. That is the kind of report that the president would have needed to know about at the time that it was done. Excuse me. Following on to that, all of the rest of the intelligence as it flows together is put together into intelligence product. That would have been done at Defense Intelligence Agency, done in Afghanistan at the theater intelligence level, done at the CIA. And as I understand it, his PDB information was done from multiple groomed products. That's intelligence that was analyzed by professionals at multiple agencies, and which would have been put together into a 3 or 4 sentence PDB bullet that would have gone to the president. The word briefed, again, is the word that everyone is hanging on to. Shown, discussed, told to, handed on a slip of paper for him to read. All of that is considered briefing. Him finding it on his desk and picking it up and reading, that's it. Was the president informed at any time in any way with any acceptable communications methodology of this information? That's the question they don't want to answer. Kayleigh McEnany is a professional liar. Not 2 days ago, she came out and said, none of this happened, that it didn't exist, the president wasn't briefed. Now we find her parroting, I mean, she was parroting the same words as Putin's press secretary, Peskov. Now we find a 180-degree turn, that the information was there. Now they're questioning its validity to do a classic Trump move of calling essentially the information fake news. Intelligence agencies do demur from time to time. CIA could report one thing. Defense intelligence could demur on their assessment. Just because Coast Guard's intelligence agency or certain State Department's intelligence and research division does not concur with the Special Operations Command's assessment and the CIA's assessment does not mean that that intelligence is wrong, is invalid. It just means that they may not have the same analytical belief or the same, even though they have the same information. Now, with the politicization of some of these agencies, there's always going to be someone that will try to cover for Donald Trump. We've already seen that. It could be the director of national intelligence himself, who's just a paid political hack with no intelligence experience. And that will give the White House the cover it needs to say, well, not everybody believed it, therefore you shouldn't believe it.
Susan Rice was on your network, MSNBC, last night, Malcolm, and she said, why is he not acting like a normal American president and expressing solidarity with our troops and determination to punish our arch adversary for these types of behaviors? Do we know the answer to that question fully?
You know, I've met Susan Rice many times, and just a wonderful person who did. It's all business, you know. She's the principal that makes you sit up straight in your chair when you go to your parent teachers meeting, right? She is not joking. She wants you to know, why is this man not behaving like a president? And the question that is now going to be put out there again, that we're all discussing once again, is who is he truly beholden to? Who is he working for? As you all know, I believe that he's working for himself, and he's more than willing to work with any other party in the world to do that. But, you know, like I said, the Times Union called that a conspiracy theory 2 years ago. Despite the mountain of evidence that's out there, Donald Trump does not work in the interest of the United States, because Donald Trump sees the United States as something that should be working in his interest. So he'll coordinate with whatever country he sees fit.
Mike, do you wish to defend your former newspaper?
Yeah. I don't think the newspaper made that assertion. I think a columnist for the newspaper, whose opinion is, you know, his opinion, made that comment. But it's out there. There are people that disagree. And the point being, now that it's out there, they're saying, well, it wasn't a credible. They're trying to suggest. They're gaslighting it, essentially. They're creating doubt about the report that they previously said didn't exist. Now they're saying, well, it was there, but, you know, it was ambiguous, and we didn't really know whether it was true. And that's where it seems to be going.
So Malcolm, I have a question for you, because I want to go back to something I said before, but which I think may be the case. Suppose for a second, that that this guy, Trump, belongs to another guy named Putin, literally belongs to him. If from the very beginning, he was talking about how he loved Putin, how he loved the Russians and all the rest. What are the implications if it were to come out, if it were proven that he was an agent of Putin? I mean, that seems to me to be a potential outcome of all of this.
You know, that's the sort of thing that's so impossible to fathom that you would really have to have an inordinate amount of evidence. And we thought that a lot of the information that we could see with our very eyes would come out in the Mueller report and explain that. Robert Mueller was never tasked to answer that question, which is a counterintelligence question. Is the president of the United States, in thrall or in debt to a foreign power, to use the words of George Washington, who warned against presidents falling under the sway of foreign governments. So that was never answered. And it's one of those bugaboos that the right wing now uses to say, Russia, 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 you've been proven wrong, when in fact it's never been proven at all. I find it very hard to believe that, look, when you're an agent of a foreign power, and not that technical term, when you're an intelligence agent, that means you have coordinated and agreed to do certain things for that power in exchange for some form of remuneration, and you sign a contract. Real spies that we hire, they sign a contract with us. They know how much they're going to get on the 1st and the 15th of every month, and they know how much they're supposed to be producing. I don't believe that Trump is that character, because Trump is such a poor intellect that he really thought 5 years ago that he could buy off a KGB officer who has an arsenal of 4,000 atomic bombs, that he could buy him off to let him build a tower in Moscow by offering the meager bribe of a $40 million penthouse apartment. That's what they were going to offer Vladimir Putin. Putin's one of the richest men in the world. They believe he has as much as $200 billion illicit dollars out there. So again, this puts Trump in the category of thinking he's smart, and you have a spy master who allows him to think that he's smart. But he just, like Hillary Clinton said, he was Putin's puppet from the very beginning. You don't need him to be an agent when the man is more than willing to do anything that you say, because he is in some sort of emotional, financial, or psychological debt to you. I like to say this. I like to say that when you owe your bookie money, you'll do just about anything.
All right. We have a ton of letters, and I want to get to those. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will continue on this conversation and on this topic. We welcome you to write to us as well. Panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Malcolm Nance, Linda Ellerbe, and Mike Spain on the group this morning. We will continue our chat right after this. As I mentioned, as we were going to break, we have a lot of letters, and a lot of them for Malcolm, not surprisingly, just with questions about all of this, because people are concerned and confused and want to know more information. So we'll go through as many of these as we can get to before the top of the hour. Jay says, I don't know about you guys, but I find this bounty thing a little puzzling. Would you pay mosquitoes to suck blood? Are our soldiers actually unaware that people are trying to kill them? Very puzzling.
Yeah. You know, I've been in Afghanistan, and I can tell you right now, if you put money on the table, people will be highly motivated to put a little more effort into their day to a certain extent. I mean, the Taliban, they do it out of love for religion and their culture. They have meager, meager salaries. You put a fresh $100 bill on the table, which is like currency to them, right? I mean, with that, you could buy literally 20 goats, and that's not a joke. That's how they enrich themselves, or you could get your son married in the fashionable way. Then they will be way more motivated. So the fact that this, as they put it in the intelligence report, extraordinarily large amounts of new money appeared out of nowhere, and these guys say that they were going to get paid in cash if they killed U.S. service members, then they'll go that extra mile to put a bullet or a bomb into somebody.
We've got another question from Edie, who says, what do you think about Pelosi and Schiff getting the same information?
Oh, I want to hear Linda Ellerbe's about that. Linda Ellerbe's on this radio. Do you guys know that?
I know. It's really cool, isn't it?
No, but I'm actually at the moment I am playing
I'm on the
quite well
radio channel
because I am the fascinated listener at this point, Malcolm.
Are you kidding? You're famous.
No, I was just on television. Isn't it?
Like forever.
The bar is not high.
So, well, what do you think, Linda? What do you?
Well, I've been sitting and listening to all of this, and it's all of a part. There were no surprises in this news story. Shocking, yes. Surprised? No. I have known who we're dealing with from the beginning. A weak, greedy man who cares nothing about the Constitution or essentially the people of the United States. And we don't need this to tell us that. We have how many people dead of coronavirus because of this man's... there's nothing new here. There's nothing I can add to this. I wish there were.
So the idea, Alan, about Pelosi and Schiff getting the same information...
I'm sorry, maybe I'm a little late to the game. What do you mean getting the same information?
Meaning they get the same intelligence on Russia.
Oh, come on.
You mean at the time? Back
yes.
At the same
yes.
time?
Oh, come on.
I have not seen this. I'm with Alan. I don't know anything about this. I didn't know that someone had said this is so.
Malcolm, do you know anything about that?
Wait, one second. There's supposed to be a big difference between supposed to get and getting. And also, when you have all of those intelligence figures working for you up there, you're not telling me that a couple of congressmen, even a powerful speaker or chairman of an intelligence committee, is getting what? Look, we know that this guy, Trump, isn't giving them the slightest kind of information that they need for all along.
Malcolm?
Yeah. I could actually call Adam Schiff and ask him. but Nancy
we'll
Pelosi
wait.
And
do
Atticus,
it, do it.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Have you got him on speed dial?
It's not speed dial, but I have his number. But let me put it this way. They are, as the head of the chairman of the Intelligence Committee and the Speaker right. of the House, entitled to the same level of intelligence as the President of the United States. But as we've learned over the last 4 years, they do not get it at the same speed or the same depth unless they request it. And this White House has specifically dragged information, edited information, and has denied Adam Schiff information that he's entitled to by law, so that they may have heard the rumors. They may have seen even some of the reporting that was going up. That is inconsequential to the President of the United States. They have no power or authority to make the president take action on this. That if they were to disclose this, and a good example of this is Harry Reid in August of 2016, Harry Reid was well aware that the director of the CIA had called the director of Russia's FSB and had told them they were aware of what they were doing in the 2016 election. Reid would painfully go on TV and try not to say anything that was top secret. He would just hint that something's going on. That they have to safeguard that information. It's Donald Trump's responsibility to know it and act on it.
Malcolm, wait a second. So you're telling us mm-hmm. that, in fact, if the intelligence figures did not give the information that the president needed, either by banging his head against the wall and saying, you got to listen to me, boss, you got to do this, that they were going to give it to Pelosi and to Adam Schiff? I don't think so.
Yeah, well, let me tell you, I believe that if anything, that they may have actually seen some of the reporting. But again, they're obliged by law not to open their mouths or use it. All they can do is call the White House. They can't do any other thing with that same intelligence. Hundreds of people knows this information. It's just the pipeline of the way intelligence moves. Guys like me, watch officers who might have been in Afghanistan or in the White House, they read these reports. They just cannot say anything because of the level of classification. And again, Nancy Pelosi is not beholden to the United States to come on TV and say Russia is paying bounties. It's her job to go to the president and to the speaker of the House, Senate Majority Leader, and get them to have the White House take action. They're the executive branch.
But there's no indication she did anything like that. There's no indication she got the information in the first place.
It's possible. Yeah. And the right wing will say, why did Nancy Pelosi stop the deaths of U.S. service members? I mean, it's quite possible she knew, but her obligation not to say a word. Republicans use that against us all the time.
I don't think she knew, and anything's possible, Malcolm, including the fact that a pig with wings just flew through my yard, but it didn't happen.
Christine writes and says,
it could handle it.
Christine writes and says, this is treason. The Republicans have to call this for what it is, especially because the way Hillary was hammered on Benghazi, Congress must impeach again, not wait for November. Pete says, until someone can show me how Russia would actually benefit from paying a bounty for the killing of Americans, I remain skeptical. And yes, I do see the motivation of revenge for America arming and financing in the 80s to kill Soviet soldiers. But I seriously don't believe simple cold revenge would be enough motivation. What's the motive? This is the question no one seems to be asking or answering. Go, Malcolm.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of motivation. There is a secret war going on against Russian intelligence services, and apparently it's a one-sided war. Russia has almost unleashed the GRU, the Russian Military Intelligence Service. That the GRU spearheaded the attack on the United States in the 2016 election. It was their officers that were indicted, that were coming to the U.S. Russia carried out a chemical weapons attack on a NATO ally in Britain, trying to assassinate a former spy over there and killing British citizens. Russia also is pretty mad at us 2 years ago, they attempted to take a Syrian oil field with 400 Russian mercenaries from a company called PMC Wagner, and they ran into 12 Special Forces soldiers who had the entire power of U.S. air power there, and we slaughtered 250 Russian soldiers that were attempting to kill those Special Forces soldiers and take that Syrian oil field. They have a lot of payback going on around the world. Russia's real goal, though, is to use their intelligence services to destabilize America everywhere and to make us look weak. Putin is a power player in that. And let me tell you, he is the spy master in chief. He's like me. Every day of his existence is honed on his experience as an intelligence officer, even when he's out gardening.
All right, we're going to take a break and go to the top of the hour. I just want to unfortunately report sad news that the comedy legend Carl Reiner has passed away, 98 years old, and writer, producer, director, of course, part of Sid Caesar's legendary team, the Dick Van Dyke Show creator, the 2,000-year-old man, of course, with Mel Brooks. In fact, he just posted a photo with Mel Brooks just yesterday on his his social media. So very sad news, but Carl Reiner dead at the age of 98. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We will go to news with Ray Graff right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Watercolors by Edith Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Huntsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, paintings of people and pets from emailed photographs, no contact required, completed work within 3 weeks or less. Edith-Huntsberger.artistwebsites.com. The Law Office of Paul C. Rapp, Kingston, New York, specializing in copyright, trademark, internet, art, and entertainment matters and manuscript legal review for self-published authors and small publishers. PaulRapp.com. And the Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolting Landing, New York, presenting its 8th annual Lake George Hikeathon, going virtual on July 5th. No registration necessary. All welcome. LakeGeorgeHikeathon.org.
This is Northeast Public Radio, WAMC FM HD 90.3 Albany, WRUN HD 90.3 Remsen Utica, WAMK HD 90.9 Kingston, WOSR HD 91.7 Middletown, WCEL HD 91.9 Plattsburgh, WCAN HD 93.3 Canajoharie, WANC HD 103.9 Ticonderoga, WAMQ HD 105.1 Great Barrington, WWES HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANZ HD 90.1 Stamford, WANR 88.5 Brewster, WAMC AM 1400 Albany.
Support for WMC comes from Neller Insurance, Copaig, Valencia, New Lebanon, Chatham. Family owned, insuring homes, autos, farms, businesses, and lives, supporting public radio in the Hudson Valley, Berkshires, and Northwest Connecticut. KNellerINS.com. And Studio KTM Organic Hair Salon, featuring individual attention in a private environment with cutter and colorist Kristen Marquette using Naturalique organic products. StudioKTM.com.
This is WAMC News. I'm Ray Graff. China has approved a contentious national security law that will allow authorities to crack down on subversive and secessionist activity in Hong Kong. Hong Kong's sole representative on the Standing Committee of the National People's Congress confirmed the law had been passed. Hong Kong's leader says it will only target a small minority of lawbreakers. Passage of the law is seen by many as the boldest move yet to erase the legal firewall between the semi-autonomous territory and mainland China's authoritarian Communist Party system. As coronavirus cases rise in many states around the U.S., New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is calling on President Trump to do two things.
First, sign an executive order directing everyone to wear a mask. And then let the president lead by example and let the president put a mask on it.
Also at Cuomo's Monday briefing, the Democratic governor said officials are reconsidering plans to allow indoor dining at New York City restaurants to avoid a rebound of coronavirus infections. Cuomo noted that indoor dining has been problematic in other states. Echoing a frequent talking point and tweet by President Trump, New York State Republican Committee Chair Nick Langworthy says voters will support the GOP when it comes to police policies. In Albany Monday, Langworthy was asked whether the minority party expects to retake control of the New York State Senate in November.
I know that the Republican Party stands for law and order. the Democratic Party is certainly based on its performance on primary day is standing in the way of law and order. And we will put that on the ballot in 62 counties of the state of New York this year.
The head of the Vermont Senate is calling on the Agency of Education to create a task force to study the best ways to reopen in-person schools this fall. Vermont schools closed in March in response to the COVID-19 pandemic. In a Monday statement, Senator Tim Ash, a Democrat and progressive, says he is worried that any further delay will make it more difficult for local school leaders and increase the anxiety levels by students and families. Ash says the task force should include teachers, superintendents, principals, and school board members. A spokeswoman for Vermont Governor Phil Scott says state education officials are already meeting weekly to study the issue. On Wall Street, the Dow down 67 at 25,528, NASDAQ up 71 at 9,945. Clouds will be with us again today. Showers and thunderstorms are likely in the upper 70s and lower 80s. Scattered showers and storms tonight, lows in the 60s. Don't shoot the messenger, Alan, but more clouds and showers and thunderstorms tomorrow in the 70s and lower 80s. At last report, cloudy 70 in Essex Junction, Vermont, 71 in Brewster, New York, 67 and cloudy in Holyoke, Massachusetts, cloudy and 70 in Albany. More WAMC News next hour.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. A lot going on this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Malcolm Nance, and Linda Ellerby on the show. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Of course, we're talking about Russia. We do have a number of letters. I want to get to those, and then we'll move on to other stuff. Michael says, didn't George W. Bush ignore an intelligence report that bin Laden determined to attack U.S. soil? Is this the same situation, Malcolm?
I think so. And, you know, at least with Bush, they read the reports, and Condoleezza Rice and some of those old Russia hands over there, just they didn't ignore it so much as it wasn't at the top of their priority radar. And then when, you know, it didn't have really specifics about using aircraft, use hijacking planes and turning into flying bombs. This is very different, I think, in the sense that we have specific intelligence. We captured people. We captured their money. We are probably running down the intelligence officers in Tajikistan and their communications, even as we speak. And there's probably a lot more evidence than we know about, other than the, you know, the lead of Russia paying bounties.
More letters that we go to. John says, what are the chances the Senate Republicans begin to abandon Trump and make him vulnerable to removal because they see their chances of being better without him than with him? Well, Alan, this seems to be a question that we have asked many, many times, but I'll let you take another crack at it.
Well, give me just a little hint of what you're looking for here, Joe.
meaning? Well, so the question is we always seem to say, is this the time that the Republicans are finally going to give up on Trump?
That's right. And it's a great question, Joe. The Republicans are really between a rock and a hard place now. The guys in the House don't have to worry. They're never going to be in charge again. But the guys in the Senate, the people in the Senate, and they're desperately holding on for dear life to control the Senate, are not going to be able to be at ease here. And they are people like Lindsey Graham and other, what's the right word, schnooks like that, are going to have to be deciding, is their individual Senate seat, which in the case of Graham, I don't know if it is up for grabs. I don't think it is. And so many of them will have to decide whether or not they have to severely criticize Trump for all of what he's doing, in which case I suspect there is no way out for them. I think they're done for.
We also go to this letter from Dave. So Trump can troll social media, rail against a football player taking a knee, praise a white power supporter parading in golf carts in a retirement community, yet somehow he's not aware of American soldiers being Russia-financed targets. Where the hell are the Republicans? Alan writes to us and says, it was asked if a complete undisputed intelligence brief was given to the president about the bounties, what would that do? Unanimous agreement among intelligence agencies didn't sway the president about Russian interference in the 2016 election. Rich says, would any congressional group have the killing for ransom intelligence shared with them? Anybody on that? Okay, moving on. Kevin says, it has been reported that Trump is in constant contact with Putin over 24 calls. Can we demand that a nonpartisan panel review these conversations to see if what has been promised? I don't think Trump is smart enough to cover his butt. I guess this is out of the reporting from Carl Bernstein and on CNN. Malcolm,
well, the answer to that would... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Please. They wouldn't do it during the impeachment. Why would they suddenly do it now?
And Alan?
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly what I was going to say. Whatever Malcolm says, that's what I was going
to
say.
Mike.
I stand with Malcolm and Alan.
Yeah.
Or as they used to say when I was covering the Congress, and somebody would stand up and say, I would like to associate myself with those remarks, is another way of saying, gee, I wish I'd said that.
Wait, what will be the turning point where Republicans will say, I got to start distancing myself from this guy. He's like a lead balloon that's going to take me down. When will that happen, Alan?
Well, the problem is that when they poll the Republican rank and file, it's still 90% in favor of Trump. That's
I think it's down. I think it's down in the 70s, honestly. I think the Santa New York Times poll had it.
Okay, I hadn't seen it, but 70% is still a lot of Republicans.
Yeah, I know.
You know, and if you run in a primary and you've ticked him off, for want of a better word, you got to be thinking, this is the end of my political career. This is a time for profiles in courage. We are not seeing them. We're seeing profiles in cowardice. We're seeing a Lindsey Graham who may say something critical. These guys are cowards, but they're not of men of and women of courage. What is Susan Collins going to do in Maine? She's behind in the polls now. This is going to kill her.
Well, Kavanaugh. Yeah. Go ahead.
Let us not forget the Kavanaugh vote.
Right, exactly.
I missed that. Well, I didn't hear what Linda said.
The Kavanaugh vote, too. She was saying that she won't.
If we get around to that subject, by the way, today, and I don't care if we don't because I'm thoroughly enjoying listening to Malcolm and all of the listeners on this. They have valid things to say. If we get around to the SCOTUS decision, I will have plenty to say because of the five of us on this panel, only one of us has ever had a child or been forced with a decision whether or not to have a child.
Well, we will.
I have plenty to say on that one. I am like Malcolm in that, yes, even when I'm gardening, I'm still a woman.
I'm going out and having a coffee now so I can hear this.
Yeah, we will get to that story in just a second.
If we don't, that's okay.
No, it's next up on the list.
This right now, this affects everybody equally as much as I'm not saying that. The SCOTUS decision affects women. It affects men too. But right now, this story is critical. This Russia story, and I'm happy to stay right with this, though I have little to contribute. Certainly not as much as Malcolm. I'm happy to just go on listening.
I promise we'll get to it in just a second. I do want to ask. Adam Schiff was on. I think just as I was coming in, I think he was on CNN, and. He was bringing up this point that he was saying, you know, there was some information that he had that he couldn't share with the press because it was classified. But he said his big question is then why is the president, because the timing then becomes exactly as this is happening, the president is inviting Russia back to the G6. Your thoughts on that, Malcolm?
Well, again, everything Donald Trump does is within the prism of what benefits Russia. I actually wrote a whole chapter about that in my second book, Plot to Destroy Democracy, that Russia managed starting in 2013 when he was at Miss Universe to create a perception filter on Donald Trump to where anything that would benefit him or that would benefit Russia would benefit him. And he came to deeply believe that. By 2014, he was praising Putin after the invasion of Crimea for his strength and how he was so much better than Barack Obama. He is the Fred Trump replacement, Putin. You know, and Barack Obama is his, you know, Negro bugaboo. I can get away with saying that. But Donald Trump will only benefit himself. And right now he so believes that bringing Putin back in and doing whatever favor that was promised of him will exceed whatever he thinks honor and dignity and money he could get from the presidency of the United States. And one quick point. Why do the Republicans stick with this? Principally because they believe that there is a silent majority that's going to give them the election again, like in 2016.
We've been hearing murmurings about this for a long time, but it is official. The European Union will bar U.S. travelers when the bloc opens its external borders this week. It will admit foreigners from only 15 countries, including China and South Korea. U.S. is not on that list. All right.
Joe, I just want to.
Yes.
A great personal risk to me as a political scientist and my reputation, whatever's left of it, and that is I don't agree with Malcolm. I think this guy belongs to Putin lock, stock, and barrel. I don't think he's making up his mind as he goes along. I think he is a prisoner in this whole arrangement with Putin, and he doesn't, or as my dad used to say, doesn't say a word in opposition to Putin. That's what I think.
No, you agree with me. Because that's I agree with you. That's exactly what's going on. The question is, what's the debt?
Yes, it is. It is, but, you know, based on the fact that this guy has from the first moment been talking about the Russians being his friends and how much he admires them and how much he admires Putin and all the rest, we got one letter saying maybe it's the, you know, the PP episode in the Moscow hotel. I don't think so. I think it's far worse than that. That's my own view based on how he's been acting all along.
All right. Let us go to the SCOTUS story. As promised, the Supreme Court struck down Louisiana abortion law with Roberts the deciding vote. The case over a state law requiring doctors performing abortions to have admitting privileges at nearby hospitals is the first abortion ruling since two Trump appointees joined the court. Conservatives suffered a setback, and from an unlikely source, Chief Justice John Roberts added his crucial fifth vote to those of the court's four-member liberal wing, saying that respect for precedent compelled him to do so, even though he had voted to uphold an essentially identical Texas law in a 2016 dissent. Linda Ellerbe, you're on.
Okay, I'm not going to address Justice Roberts on this because I don't believe that is the issue. I'm 75 years old, and Republicans have gone after my rights as a woman for my whole life. And nearly all sitting Republican senators voted to confirm Justice Kavanaugh. So this court is a given. I want to speak to a story that I read that was so troubling to me, and I believe it was in the Times. It was an interview with a young woman of color, and she said that, a lot of the language I heard was about protecting Roe v. Wade, and she's 26, this young woman. She said it felt grounded in the 70s feminist movement. It feels like I can't focus on abortion access if my people are dying. The narrative around abortion wasn't made for people from the hood. It's not that young people don't care about abortion, it's that they don't think it applies to them. I want to address that.
Please do.
Abortion, nobody is for abortion. Start with that. And please understand it. Some of us are for choice. Nobody wants to have an abortion. Nobody thinks it's a good idea, and nobody comes away from it untouched by it. And nobody's going to end abortion by legislating it away. All that happens is that then only wealthy people, and that means mostly white people who can afford it, will be able to get one. let me try and make it clear to young women of color and young of any color, okay? Abortion is not going to be available legally for you. It will be available backroom or legally if you can afford to fly someplace. But it is not going to go away by legislation. And the argument that the conservatives say, well, and I'm quoting here the Republican National Committee, the values of life and health of both the mother and the unborn baby are important. Well, no, they're not. Not to Republicans, because you can't tell me that they're important and then you don't want to do anything to support that child or that mother who's forced to have a baby that she doesn't want to have for any number of reasons. And they're usually not frivolous reasons, folks. They are not. And no, don't tell me you're for all life. If you're for the death penalty, that's not true. That's simply not true, and we need to deal with reality here. Now, as I pointed out earlier, I'm the only woman on the show today, and I have watched men make most of the decisions about my body for most of my life. I also want to point out, it would be unfair not to point out, that the Roe v. Wade decision was all men that gave me back control over my body, and that is the law of the land. And it is always easier to organize against a law than it is to protect an already existing law. And that is part of the problem. We are seeing a great deal of organization against police brutality, against racism, and all of this is wonderful, okay? It is much harder to organize and get people excited about protecting what already is their right. Right now, it is your right. It has been slowly eroded since Roe v. Wade by state after state after state. Mississippi is not the only state that has already put heavy restrictions on this. But young women need to understand that this does affect them. This is saying, this is old from the 70s feminist movement. Well, you know what? That gave you all a whole lot, that 70s feminist movement. I hate to see that you don't see the connection to this, to Black Lives Matter, that you don't see the connection to this, to racism, that you don't see the connection to this, to class differences and money differences, that you don't see the connection to your own life. And I would just urge young women to rethink that, and I would urge young men to rethink that too. If we can get in the streets because young black men are being killed by police, then I want men to stand up for my right to choose when to be a mother or not, because it affects every other choice I will be able to make about my life.
There is a news analysis piece in the New York Times that says the Supreme Court stopped anti-abortion momentum for now, saying that the movement has a long pipeline of cases that, if taken up by the Supreme Court, could present a more direct challenge to Roe v. Wade. So, Linda, I mean, with that in mind, I mean, that makes your points so important, because this fight is far from over, of course.
No, I suspect it's not going to be over in my lifetime. I remember I was standing in the newsroom at KHOU in Houston, Texas, the CBS affiliate, when the Roe v. Wade decision came down. And Sarah Weddington, the young woman who argued the case in the Supreme Court, was a Texas woman. And Sarah Weddington was 26 years old when she successfully argued Roe v. Wade in front of the Supreme Court. I don't expect this to go away in my lifetime. I would hope that more people would try to understand that it's not about being pro-life or pro-abortion. It is about control of your body, and it is about who is going to control your body. Because unless you can control your body, you cannot control whether you work, when you work, how much you get paid. You can't control anything else if you cannot control your own body.
Alan, Linda pundit on the question of John Roberts, giving us all that wonderful information just a moment ago. I'm curious as to what you think of where this, just given the last three decisions, major decisions from the court, of where we are with this Chief Justice.
Well, of course, I loved what Linda said, and I want to associate myself with her remarks. She was exactly right. And that's the difference between right and wrong, just and not just. However, John Roberts isn't worried about that. John Roberts is worried about his position with this court, how he's going to be taken in history, whether or not he's going to be able to say that this is a legitimate court, not a kangaroo court. And that's what's on his mind. And that is why in these decisions. Now, let's just try to remember that Roberts is not a Trumpian. Roberts is a Bushian. And that is very important because the Bushes hate Trump. So do I think that that has anything to do with where Roberts is coming up on this? I do. I absolutely do.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, it's not only a victory for, people who believe in the right to choice, but it's a victory for the legal process. Because as you pointed out at the beginning, Roberts basically was with the minority 5 years ago that was up, that argued in favor of the Texas law that's identical to this law, but he went along with the liberals this time and not embracing their argument that it was kind of a ridiculous law that made no sense, but that it was a precedent already set by the court. And I'm not a lawyer, but I would suggest that if he's recognizing precedent, he would lean against overturning Roe v. Wade should that come to the court in the next few years, that he would respect the decision made in 1971, and that it would prevail because you have the liberals and you have Roberts. But already Trump's campaign is using it to raise money and to go after the conservative religious who are anti-abortion, and they're using it, and it might spark some energy in an area that maybe wasn't enthusiastic to him. So there could be political ramifications of it.
Just some nice letters about what Linda said a moment ago. Richard said, "Preach, Linda Ellerbe. I could not agree with you more." Annie says, "We should all applaud Linda for her clear, honest, and concise, and how clear, honest, and concise she is on abortion. Listen to her. She's exactly right, and her voice should be heard by all. When men or women can, by decree or law, control anyone's body, they will eventually have control over all aspects of our bodies," says Robert. "We make a civilization by human law, not law of the jungle." Deborah says, "I think there are many women who opt for an abortion with relief and are not choosing an abortion with regrets. They may regret the liaison with a particular person, but accept an abortion as a positive option that removes the burden of an unintended and unwanted pregnancy. Not everyone wants to apologize or feel sorry about that choice." Linda, any thoughts on that?
May I speak? Yes, may I speak to that?
Please.
And someone very kindly praised me for being candid. It's time I was candid. I had an abortion. I was 19 years old. I got pregnant. Not proud of that fact. I got pregnant through ignorance. I had never been taught anything about birth control. I had never had sex education. It was never offered in my school, in my church, or in my family. I don't blame any of that. I mean, what happened was my fault. My ignorance was my own fault. But yes, I had an illegal abortion. Okay? A man... I had to borrow money from my boss. I had to borrow $600. And I told him why. I stood there and told him why. And he told me not to sit down in his office. And he shamed me. And he told me that not only had I taken a job that a man with a family could have had, but that I was a whore and a slut. And I stood there and took it because I needed the money. This was not a pregnancy that I was 19 years old. I could barely handle my own life, much less raising a child. It would not have been right for me or the child. And it was a hard decision to come to, but I did it. And a man, a friend of a friend of a friend, which is how it worked, I'll never know if he was a doctor, but he came to my apartment at midnight on an assigned night, and my roommate, she and I were waiting for him, and he performed this in my apartment, and he put me under with sodium pentothal. I was too dumb to know at 19 how very dangerous that was. I was lucky. I lived. I went on to have two wonderful children and four grandchildren. Now, I didn't make the decision lightly, and I will tell you that I do not regret the decision, but it is a sadness in my life that I think about every day. And most women who have had abortions do that. Yes, the relief is there, but also the sadness. Not regret. I don't regret my decision.
I'm so taken by that story, your story, because I, you know, you said you had a roommate, but other than that, you're alone in this, right? I mean, that
completely alone, and I assure you that you know we are. Yes, I was alone. I was alone, and I couldn't. I didn't want to talk about it. I couldn't talk about it, and there was no one open to having an open conversation about this. But every woman knew someone who had had an abortion or knew someone who knew someone. That's how I know about illegal abortions. And that's why I'm well aware that legal abortion also is, it, we can't just make legal abortion another white privilege, okay? We just can't do that. I was able to borrow money and at least get an abortion. Had I been a woman of color or a woman who didn't have a job, would that have happened, or would I have had to go home and try a coat hanger?
Mm.
These are the real things. This is the real world, folks. It is not about sitting in a congressional hearing or even on the Supreme Court and deciding intellectually what you think women ought to do under circumstances that you've never experienced.
I think I speak on behalf of the audience.
I didn't mean you personally, John.
Well, no. I think I speak on behalf of the audience of just thanking you for sharing that with us and how powerful it is to hear. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got some letters on that and other stuff as well. We'll be right back. Carol Ann writes, I am moved beyond words. Linda speaks for so many of us. Her honesty about her story should be heard by everyone. Marie said, is this where I say me too? Raising my hand with Linda. We got this from Zoe, who says, no woman ever got pregnant to have an abortion. Imagine the press when they burned down that billboard. Linda, thank you for sharing your story about your abortion. Many of us share a very similar experience. Ellen says, I send you a hug, and I too was saved by my right to choose as a young woman. What a hideous confrontation may await, and this is a searing and terrifying truth. Ariande, I hope I'm saying that right. Ariande says, thank you, Linda, for your courage. What will be a game changer is when men start admitting that they supported their partners aborting fetuses that they created. Amen, says Robert. Thank you. And also this listener who says Republican Party is pro-life up until the point of birth, and then you are on your own. A lot of letters this morning on that.
I've often wondered, Joe, about Republican legislators who follow the line. And by the way, I just want to say I love Linda Hillary.
Yeah. Agreed.
I wonder about their daughters and their granddaughters when they come home and say that they are going to have a baby and that they need an abortion, and what those hypocrites do then.
You know what they do.
Yeah, they get them for them.
What, you know, Linda, maybe this isn't the question to ask, but I'm just curious, as going through that experience and then covering the Supreme Court decision, what was that like for you?
Well, you know, I wasn't covering that decision. I was in Houston, Texas. I was a young reporter, so I wasn't covering it. But I can tell you another story that I told when Cokie died. During the 70s, there was a moment when they were passing the Hyde Amendment to further, which would outlaw federal funding for any place that would offer a pregnancy termination to a woman. It came down to conference committee. It had passed the House, it had passed the Senate, and now you have a committee, because generally those two bills are not the same, so you have a conference committee of some people from the House and some from the Senate, and they go into a room and they hammer that out, and then it goes to the president to be signed into law. And this was happening, and this was in a closed room, mind you, and it was all men, and sitting outside in a hall on a bench, Cokie Roberts and I. And we were sitting there knowing that this group of men inside this closed room, not one of whom had ever faced this choice or would ever face this choice, were deciding how we should spend our bodies, if you will, how they wanted us to how they wanted to control our bodies. And Cokie and I looked at each other and were just, it had nothing to do with whether or not you supported choice or did not. It had to do with who was going to be the deciding people, who was going to make the decision. And it was a bizarre moment that we talked about for years after that, that strange moment of sitting in the hall, waiting for the guys to come out and tell you what you could do with your body.
We got a letter, a couple I want to share with you. Barbara says, as a woman who had two abortions, one legal and one illegal, and has two adult children now, I want to add that the women's liberation movement fought for and won the right to contraception, abortion, the right of women, especially lesbians, to keep their children, opposed racist course of sterilization. It was not just six male Supreme Court justices. Hundreds of thousands of women marched, petitioned, lobbied, sat in, disrupted hearings for that right. In Washington State in 1969 to 1970, I was involved in the first and only popular referendum on liberalizing Washington State's abortion laws. We won 4-1. Also, this from a listener who says, thank you for your story. My story is different. My daughter had a legal abortion. She was, like you, too young to care for a child. Although legal, it was traumatic for both of us. Perhaps more for me because I had given birth to two children. Linda is correct. It was traumatic. Linda is correct. We are talking about white privilege. Let those white men who make decisions about our bodies care for those children who cannot be cared for by their birth mothers and their families. Denying health care, birth control, access to women's health care is what we have come to. Is that what we've come to? What kind of country have we become? Mary Ellen says, thank you for this discussion. The science shows that unplanned pregnancies are prevented by access to care. When women have access to care, they use modern contraception. We need health care for all. Women's rights are human rights. And Beth says, yay, Linda Ellerbe, if men could become pregnant, abortion would be a sacrament. There would be paid monthly sick days for menstruating men, free child care. There'd be birth control and abortion clinics free in every county and every state. Paternity leave would be paid for 3 years. All right. I thank everyone for those letters. And, of course, to Linda. In our just remaining moments, about 10 minutes or so, I would like to talk about the other big story, of course, which is coronavirus, which we have not addressed yet, and I would like to. The numbers are staggering. They continue to go up. States are pausing their plans to reopen as the cases soar. 54,000 deaths in the U.S. are linked to nursing homes. A top CDC official warned we're not even beginning to be over this. At least 95 people who visited a Michigan bar have tested positive. So those states are hitting the brakes on reopening. And yet we still really have no policies or major task force addressing this other than to say that the news is good from the administration. But in Florida, where daily case counts soared to new records over the weekend, the city of Jacksonville said Monday that face masks would be required in any indoor public place where social distancing was not possible. That is important because the city is scheduled to host the Republican National Convention in August. Several other cities and counties across the state are also moving to reimpose restrictions in response to the surge, which has followed the reopenings of beaches, bars, restaurants, and other social activities. South Florida counties closed their beaches for the 4th of July weekend. The governor of Tennessee, Bill Lee, signed an executive order on Monday extending his state's emergency order and some other pandemic measures until August 29th. Tennessee recorded a record number of new cases on Monday. Meanwhile, Governor Brian Kemp of Georgia is expected to extend for another 2 weeks the state's remaining pandemic restrictions. And I would just like to focus on that word remaining, which are set to expire on Wednesday. Mike Spain.
Yeah, you know, I was reading about all this, and there's a state senator from California, from Sacramento. He's a physician. Richard Pan, his name is, and he sums it all up. He says, I'm frustrated because it's not that we don't know what to do. It's we know what to do, and we're just not doing it. We know how to do this. It has been done. It has succeeded around the world. It has succeeded in New York, which had a terrible, terrible bout with the pandemic and continues to fight it. But these people, these governors in Florida and Georgia and Arizona and Texas know what to do. They're just resisting. They don't want to. They don't want to do it.
So how do you think it? How do you think it is to be?
Can I listen here? I know I overused my time on the last subject.
Not at all.
But I just want to say this because it actually, in some way, kind of has to do with the other subject. I mean, we are not in this case. We are not, we are talking about willful cruelty here. Somehow someone has decided that not wearing a mask is what makes America great. And I every time I hear one of those people say, when you say Black Lives Matter and they say all lives matter, I want to know then, well, if all lives matter, why aren't you wearing a mask?
Very good point. Wear a seatbelt.
Yeah, right. Alan, you were going to say?
I was just going to say, how would you like to be one of these?
I need you near your mic.
That's right. I was holding the wrong thing.
There you go. That's okay.
No, I was holding my cell phone.
Now we can hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay. But how would you like to be DeSantis or the Georgia guy or the South Carolina guy? What in the world must they be thinking as they have to eat this and say, yeah, you have to wear a mask. And yeah, we've been following this fool for so long that we've just been doing what's good for us. We think politically, and now it comes out to bite us. Really a case study in political hypocrisy.
It absolutely is. And they're getting what they deserve. The trouble is we're also getting what they deserve.
Yeah. And by the way, I know that we're out of time, but there is so much bad news now. There are all kinds of health experts who are saying 50% of the country, 70% of the country are going to end up with this. That's us, folks. That's everybody as a result of this president's inability to handle this.
Malcolm, go ahead. We got about 3 minutes.
Okay. I've said this before. I'm going to say it again. And it's when it comes up as a truth, I want you all to remind me. At some point, we are going to find that there was a meeting, a conference, some documents that will be the equivalent to the German Wannsee conference that showed that this administration was just going to let this virus run its course. The evidence is there. There was a lot of talk over the last 2 months about herd immunity, which would require 60% of the country to get the virus in order to build up some form of immunity to it, which, of course, would mean that if anyone agreed with that, it meant that you would just let the chips fall where they may and let people die, knowing we would not be able to stop it. But they were more interested in the economics of the country than the lives of the citizen. And at that, I mean, you know, of all the things we keep saying we should criminally charge people for, people don't seem to understand that 125,000 Americans are dead due to the incompetency of this government. We should be in arms, but they're not really in arms. You know what I mean? Up in arms, pitchforks and torches. We should be calling this out, but we're so inured. It's like a school shooting. We don't care after the first few minutes, but we need to understand that we could lose hundreds of thousands of more of our fellow citizens. And this administration needs to be held to account personally, down to the individual.
Well, we are out of time. What a show. Man, you all are on fire today. Thank you very, very much for being with us and for talking about these issues. Thanks to all of our listeners for weighing in as well. Alan, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Also, thanks to Mike Spain. Malcolm, Linda, thank you both. Thank you all for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program. We will continue. We have our Congressional Corner segment next on the Roundtable.